ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Do you think you'd never be caught out by disinformation? Well, cast your mind back. Remember that big story about the bedbugs at the Paris Olympics? Well, that was actually a very effective Russian disinformation campaign. So effective that most people still believe it to this day. G'day, it's Hamish McDonald here. And I've learned that disinformation can be surprisingly subtle and hard to spot. If you want to join me interrogating the dark world of disinformation, stream The Matter of Facts now on ABC iView.
Warning. The program that follows contains a fair bit of blood and guts and murder and mayhem, so listener discretion is advised.
This was a story about a husband and wife, and the wife ended up dead.
Phoebe Judge is best known for her podcast Criminal, which usually is more focused on humans. But the very first episode ever was about an owl and a murder.
This very famous story of Michael Peterson, who happened to live in the same town where we lived. And this story had been told from every direction.
Rich, white, him an ex-defense employee turned novelist with a secret gay lover, she a telecommunications exec. They have a mansion in a leafy suburb with a pool and a staircase. And it all seems perfect. Until this 911 call.
911, what is your emergency?
Peter Street, please.
What's wrong?
My wife had an accident. She's still breathing.
What kind of accident?
She fell down the stairs. She's still breathing. Please come.
Is she conscious?
What?
Is she conscious?
No, she's not conscious.
And the wife ended up dead. And Michael Peterson, her husband, was thought to have been the one who had basically bludgeoned her with a fireplace poker, and she had fallen down the stairs. That was what everyone thought. It was pretty simple.
Hello?
I mean, there was a very famous miniseries called The Staircase, which none of us had actually ever seen.
Yeah, Toni Collette and Colin Firth starred in the dramatic account. Wait a second. Colin, call me. This is the second time that you've appeared in this series about animal criminals. Have you got a bit of a thing for animals too?
But we wanted to do something different, and the way that we came in was talking about this kind of wild owl theory.
The suspect in question, a barred owl.
We found a man named Larry Pollard, who's a lawyer in Durham, who came up with another idea and said that Kathleen Peterson had not been bludgeoned with a fireplace poker, but rather she had been out by the pool with her husband having wine, had gotten a little drunk, and an owl had come down and hit her on the back of her head, and she became so flipped out by this that she went running into the house and somehow fell down the stairs because she was just panicking trying to get out. And the very interesting thing was that the fireplace poker mark that had been made on Kathleen Peterson's skull, which is a three-pronged mark, also could look like the talons of an owl. There was also talk about microscopic owl feathers found in the wound. It's a wild, some might say ridiculous idea.
That absolutely has taken off. Kathleen Peterson died in 2001, and even now there are books and online detectives and forums and podcasts. People are putting theories out about the blood smears and the sink in the kitchen, and they're still debating, was it the husband or was it the owl?
Really, what I was interested in is the fact that a man had decided to risk his whole reputation, that he had devoted himself so completely that he was bringing in stuffed owls into the studio and fake heads with talons on them to show me. What did he see? What did he see that was so convincing? If I can be in his shoes for a second, can I see what he's seeing?
I'm imagining it's like, I see dead people, but instead it's sort of, I see killer animals right next door. Welcome to Nature's Most Wanted, a series from What the Duck, where I have been travelling the world via the internet to compile a list of animal criminals. That is, animals who are frankly taking the mickey out of human law. Offences include stalking.
A bird has been terrorising them for the past 3 years.
And, using offensive language in public. I'm Ann Jones, and I finally have an excuse to turn the tables and instead of the bin chickens going through our trash, animals, it's time to rifle through your rubbish bins and find out the criminal dirty secrets of nature's most wanted. This episode is called Murder, But Not Crows. Let's find out where the bodies are buried. When it comes to being killed by an animal globally, you are much more likely to get rabies from a domestic dog bite or be kicked by a horse or have an animal-related road accident than you are to find yourself the victim of, possibly, a political assassination perpetrated by monkeys. But the chance of that is never zero. In 2007, Surinder Singh Bajwa was going okay. Earlier in the year, he'd been elected as deputy mayor of New Delhi. His adult son had increasingly popular roles in Bollywood films, and it was a Saturday. The first floor balcony was a place where the deputy mayor liked to get the paper and spend time with his wife, Nimi. And they were lucky because their house was right next door to a temple. There were green trees and space. But on the morning of October 20th, macaques appeared. Telling his wife to go inside, the deputy mayor then picked up a stick with which he planned to scare the monkeys away. A cousin of his was later quoted in the media saying, "The thing about monkeys is that if you leave them alone, they'll just look at you. But if you show them a stick, then they get angry." And it seems they did. Taken aback within the interaction at some point, the deputy mayor stepped backwards and his feet found no firm purchase. He toppled to the ground. Surinder Singh Bajwa was 52 when he died a day later. The doctors were unable to stop his internal bleeding. Another human dead at the bottom of a staircase, and a completely unexpected animal at the top. Not an animal that preys on humans.
No one sensible, of course, would walk into the Arctic in areas with polar bears because polar bears will actively hunt humans.
What?
So they're one of the few animals that will actually do that.
That's Ewan Ritchie. We'll hear more from him in a little bit. But it's an interesting point. What we know of shark bites, say, is that people don't get, you know, eaten for the most part. And orcas in the wild, they don't go for humans, even though they absolutely could. So seeing humans as prey isn't really the motive, and we need to investigate further. And how would you investigate a murder scene when you think the perpetrator is a huge carnivore? Well, cut to the USA, where you can learn crime scene investigation nature style.
It's called the Wildlife Human Attack Response Training, WHART, W-H-A-R-T, which is a terrible acronym. The warts.
Mary Roach is the author of a book called Animal, Vegetable, Criminal, When Nature Breaks the Law.
Anyway, I went to the wart seminar. It was a couple of days. It was set in a casino outside Reno, Nevada. There's a big room and there are these soft mannequins on which actual injuries are reproduced. For a bear injury, they'll be, because bears go for the face, because when it's bear to bear, they go for the place with the least fur. So there were these mannequins, like their clothing was ripped and the face was pulled off or the head was hanging off. It was horrific. And there was a bingo game right next door.
49.
And sometimes the bingo look in and there's these naked forms with gore and blood. And they're like, what the heck is going on in there? But it was fascinating just because we were learning how to apply forensics techniques to figure out, okay, first of all, was it a person or an animal? Then what species? Was it a wolf? Was it a cougar? Was it a bear?
Why do these attacks happen at all?
What typically happens is that somebody is riding a mountain bike and they ride away or they run away, and that triggers that predator-prey reaction, and the cat runs after you. Yeah.
Which is terrifying, because if a mountain lion or a cougar rubbed around your legs asking for bickies, its ears would hit your belly button. It's huge. But is all of this just a sort of, like, cocaine bear, Hollywood-fueled fear, are there really that many attacks in a year that you would need special training for carnivore perpetrators?
With bears, there's one or two fatalities per year. Cougars, that or less. So wolves, none. Coyotes, none. Certainly none with bobcats. I would say not even once a year, typically, is there a mountain lion attack on a person. Normally those cats don't want to interact. You are not on the menu. They are looking for deer, small animals. They're not shopping for dinner when they're looking at humans.
Almost all killer carnivores or even manslaughter-prone monkeys are not out to get us for breakfast, though your breakfast might actually be playing a role in these events. Professor Sindhu Radhakrishna is an expert in the behaviour of macaques. She works with the National Institute of Advanced Studies in Bengaluru, India.
Face off with the rhesus macaque is not a pleasant experience. In fact, we've had people tell us that they feed the rhesus macaque simply because they're afraid of the monkey. They just wanted to go away.
Oh, geez. Like, if you went back in time to try and unpick the origin story of the villains in so many of these stories of murderous animals, you'd find one simple thing: food. But not you as food, just food availability.
Yes, provisioning is pretty much at the root of all evil, I would like to say.
The root of all evil.
Provisioning is simply giving food. And provisioning can be voluntarily, as when you actually hand-feed monkeys. This is part of a religious tradition, both in Hinduism as well as in Buddhism, where you think when you give food out to other living beings, you gain good fortune, good karma for yourself. But provisioning also happens involuntarily, as when we put out food waste.
Yes, our rubbish is a boon for some animals.
People don't secure their trash. They leave pet food out on the porch.
Mary Roach is talking about bears in the USA in particular here.
They're creating a situation where the bear's like, you know, that's a lot easier to just wander through the back alley behind these restaurants and get a big bag of restaurant scraps than it is to go looking for berries and sedge and whatever sort of nuts and vegetable matter they normally eat.
Provisioning can also be your garden, your crops, and those who eat them can be elephants, chimpanzees, cats, boars, groundhogs, deer, corellas, possums. Provisioning is where humans become the unwitting owners of animal tuck shops.
But a lot of interactions begin with provisioning, right? Then they come closer to get it, and they sort of lose that inhibition that they have. And that's where it all begins.
Going through the garbage is the gateway crime. It's inevitable. There's going to be a situation where a bear feels like it's trapped or backed into a corner, or somebody's dog runs at it, and now there's an altercation, and people get hurt. Sometimes they get killed. So, yeah.
The mare, the macaques, the stick, and the balcony, at the root of that interaction is humans provisioning the macaques.
A young girl is in hospital with bites to her legs after being attacked by
a dingo. Is attacked.
That a dingo definitely took Azarian.
Probably the most famous or infamous stories of provisioning leading to tragic consequences in Australia is with the dingo.
Dingoes don't see people as food.
Ewan Ritchie is Professor of Wildlife Ecology and Conservation at Deakin University.
So, you know, they're really only attacking a person because someone's been feeding them and they associate food with that person, and they're not targeting that person necessarily as a prey.
Oh, no, but the consequences of those easy meals of provisioning can be disastrous for the dingoes.
Packs of rogue dingoes have begun waging war on residents.
Creeping up on the pram, they can smell food.
Because of people feeding dingo.
12 dingoes have now been destroyed.
The dingo was following me.
Becoming more confident and more
aggressive.
Whether
to shoot the rogue dingoes,
the dingoes will be killed.
Typically, we see dingo populations being targeted for culls when there's an incident where maybe a person unfortunately is attacked or in some cases tragically killed. And also, of course, there's an ongoing issue with livestock might be killed or harmed by dingoes. Basically, you could argue that in many cases, culling is really about humans wanting to protect assets, or in some cases, it's some sort of weird, almost retribution.
What evidence do we have on the impact of culling on the dingo populations?
Obviously, dingoes are highly social animals. They live in groups. Think of them being as quite complex like wolves. And anytime we take out individuals, and particularly older individuals, that's actually really significant for that population. Every time we're taking individuals out, you're potentially reducing their genetic diversity. And it's also harmful in many other ways to the environment. Culturally, it's harmful for First Nations peoples who don't agree with it. And so it's absolutely true to say that when we're killing individual dingoes, that it may not be actually particularly useful, but it's definitely also harmful in a whole range of ways.
So what do we need to do?
So we know that we don't want to feed dingoes. We know that we don't want to necessarily walk alone if there's dingoes around. We don't want to have children, of course, running around by themselves. There's a whole range of things that we can avoid doing. Really, it always comes back to educating us as people to do the right thing. So no, killing dingoes is not going to make people safer.
And yet, we do it. Why do we do it?
It's one of humans' greatest fears is being eaten by something. This deep fear of being no longer in control, no longer being the top predator, if you like, because that's what humans are. We don't like that idea. It's a deep primal thing. It must go back, obviously, you know, millennia, and it still persists.
Yeah, one way or another, we're always scared of the beast. You're listening to What the Duck on ABC Radio National. I'm Dr. Anne Jones, Chief Criminal Investigator for the RSPCA ASIO.
And the other thing I learned is that because we wear clothes.
Mary Roach, author and weird animal story enthusiast.
We wear clothes. They're like, blech, what is that? There's this coating.
Oh, so that's why it's faces and extremities that get the bite marks on them. It's sort of like they've got an aversion to certain textures, like black.
Yes, if you look at the remains of people who've been attacked by animals and frequently at the areas that have clothing, we're like, blech, I don't want that.
Be right back. Knitting a balaclava. And yes, I am being flippant. That's how I deal with discomfort. Because it is uncomfortable to look at the real causes of these murders that are perpetrated by animals. It's us, our messiness, and our fear. And now you have reason to be scared even of plants, because listen to this news report from the year 2000.
A monkey in the Indian capital, New Delhi, has been accused of murder. 48-year-old Avrin Jar died instantly after he was hit by the flower pot pushed from the top floor of a multi-storey building by a monkey. Some 7,000 monkeys live in the Indian capital, where they're worshipped by the dominant Hindu population.
Death by flower pot. The Hindu population, by the way, is also the reason why culls don't really occur in India. Animals are revered. But you can love something and be scared of it too. Right?
Some reports of an unnatural creature appeared in the media.
Dr. Satish Kumar Verma is a forensic physician and pathologist with over 35 years' experience in Indian hospitals and universities. Now, currently, he's with the Amrita Schools of Medicine in Faridabad. But in 2001, he was at work when men started attending the hospital saying they'd been attacked.
That something like a black monkey, which cannot be described in words, has started attacking the people who are residing in the eastern part of Delhi.
According to what I can piece together from the media reports, in the first 3 weeks of April, two men were attacked by a monkey-like creature.
People thought that this creature comes only in the night and injures them.
The attack numbers grow. What is this animal? And then summer really kicks in.
Suddenly the incidents increase in the magnitude because of these reports being prominently reported in the newspaper and the media.
Just the sort of thing a serial pest gets off on, right? Reports in the media of their attacks. And by the 14th of May, a collective fever is reached. The heat is seething off every surface. The city is sweating and restless. And in one night, the mystery creature attacked 50 different places, injures 16 people and causes panic. The creature is described as a monkey man. He's large and shaggy and dark, and he emits a shrill whistle when he leaps. And sometimes he's wearing a helmet, and sometimes he's wearing a burqa, and he has large glowing eyes, and sometimes he's on roller skates. What the duck is this animal?
The law enforcement agencies announced an award for anyone who catches this creature. Another thing which has increased the magnitude of these cases was that the government also announced some compensation to these victims. So more and more people become affected. You see, the animal injuries are characteristic. So you can make out whether this is produced by an animal or it is a self-inflicted or a fall injury. See, the monkeys, usually their nails are a bit sharper than the humans. They will not scratch by a single nail.
So you'd expect to see multiple scratch marks, not just one nail, like a pointer finger. And monkeys do have big canines, so the bite marks from a monkey would be very obviously monkey bite marks. The media frenzy intensifies. A man returns home from work on a scooter, and thinking he's the monkey man, residents take to him with sticks and have to be restrained from killing him. Elsewhere, residents capture the monkey man and keep it locked up, calling the police triumphantly. But they hadn't. They'd caught a dog. So as the victims pile up, not literally, metaphorically, the government makes a panel to investigate what in the monkey balls is going on.
Fortunately, I was the forensic expert.
The perfect man to put the clues together.
Actually, all these cases happen in the summer month.
So it's hot, and most of the victims are from low socioeconomic strata. They don't have access to air conditioning.
So they used to stay on the roofs of their homes with the fan on.
So they were outside, exposed to risky monkey men.
And unfortunately, the power goes off. There is some interruption in the power supply.
In fact, when there were blackouts, there were more attacks. In short, Delhi's residents were hot and bothered, and not in a good way. So what was this animal wreaking havoc? It was not.
So more and more people become affected with the phenomena which is epidemic hysteria.
Epidemic hysteria? A mass psychogenic illness? What the duck?
The glorification of the cases in the media lead to a psychological change among the persons, and they started having some sort of self-inflicted injuries.
The money for victims, plus the police reward for information, legitimised the threat, which was reported more and more in the media, spreading the disease, as it were. Dr. Verma's report said this was a cascading effect of hysteria. It's a social chain reaction of symptoms that manifest, despite there being no real underlying cause.
That this is nothing but it is a epidemic hysteria only. And once this report came into the media and the newspaper, and we said there is nothing like a monkey man, from the next day onwards, none of the fresh case came.
Just stopped.
They're stopped.
Evaporated.
The animal creature was not existing at all. It was in their brain only. Physically, it was nowhere.
It was the sounds of the night and the heat, the media and the money that led human brains to make up a boogie monkey. From the pits of the psyche, dug by the dark stabs of animal fear, of a murderous creature getting closer and closer with every provisioning year. Go! I didn't even get to tell you about the albino python that cuddled its owner to death. Not a direct quote, but that was the gist from the coroner, I kid you not. But we're out of time, so you should go and follow and subscribe and find me on socials and do all of the things, because in the next episode, we have a crow who steals a knife from the scene of a crime and then shits all through the police car.
He would ride the SkyTrain, which is like our subway system. He would go to soccer games and steal people's coffee.
I'm Anne Jones, and email me your animal stories, whattheduck@abc.net.au. What the Duck is made for Radio National on the lands of the Kulin Nation.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.